Archie Andrews to Sippy the Clown.
Captain Canuck to Howard the Duck.
We got your comics. We got your comics. Right here.
Here.
Zoom, the Retro Comic Book Show.
I'm gonna raise a fuss, I'm gonna raise a holler about a working all summer just to try to earn a dollar. Yeah, the time I call my baby, try to get a date, my boss says,
"No die, son, you gotta work late."
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. Well, my mom and papa told me, son, you gotta make some money. If you wanna use the car to go a ride next Sunday. Oh, well, I didn't go to work, told the boss I was sick.
Now you can't use a car cause you didn't work a lick.
Sometimes I wonder what I'm gonna do, but there ain't no cure for the summertime blues.
Welcome to Zoom. I'm your host, Timmy Zoom. Once again, I'm joined by my main man, Derek Crabb.
Hey, what's going on?
Not much, man. History of comics on film. You can find this, we're going to the website at the end of the show, but History of Comics on Film, check it out. It's a comprehensive history of comic books in the translation to TV, movies, et cetera, et cetera. So this week we're going to kick it with a couple of comic book reviews. But before I go into that, I just want to ask, I was looking at Bleeding Cool just for news to see what was going on lately. And I saw that they're going to, in a new Amityville horror movie, they're going to use like real footage from the real life, you know, events in the 70s. And I'm like, wait a minute, why are they even doing an Amityville horror? Who wants this? They have like 10 movies. What kind of fandom, and why is it on a fandom site like Bleeding Cool? Who cares? It's just a haunted house in the 70s. Somebody claimed that they were haunted for real, and now it's like Star Trek or Spider-Man.
It became a franchise, so.
I don't get it. I don't understand what the appeal is. And nothing happens, you know?
Yeah.
Thanks for the input on that.
No, I don't know, dude. Like, I know, I'm sure people do like it. I mean, you know, obviously, like, there's people that like the films and everything, but I'm definitely, I don't even know that I've seen, I want to say I don't even know that I've seen any of them. Like, I might have seen the first one. I don't know, but I don't, you know, like, some of those franchises I really like. Like, I like, you know, Jason and Freddy Krueger and things like that.
Yeah, but that's fictional when they make it.
Yeah.
But this is.
Well, I guess stuff like Leatherface kind of touts the line, right? Because it's like they based it on you know one true story, you know, and took it way way out of context. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, but stuff happens in theirs. In the first Amityville Horror was based on a real guy, and I mean a real family. And it was nothing happened. It just they claim some flies. There were some flies in the bathroom, and some blood coming out the walls, and that's it. And you build a franchise off of that.
Yeah, but people get hyped up over the weirdest shit. They got people lined up to get Krispy Kreme donuts, and people get all like excited about Blair Witch, and all it is a bunch of assholes in front of a camera going, "Oh my god, I'm so scared," you know. So
yeah, but that died. You know. Blair Witch died on the second movie, like this. Yeah. Oh, this second movie is shit. No more.
Yeah.
but this year is continuing on and on. And Krispy Kreme is good, man. But anyway, it's tasty. Or it was. I can't eat that stuff now. But so let's see here. Oh, and then what do you think of this whole Marvel Now thing? If you've heard of it, or they're rebooting some of the Marvel once again. Number one Marvel.
I'm kind of paying attention to it. Like, I keep seeing all the promotional art and covers and stuff that keep coming out. So, like, they just showed a bunch of stuff about the Fantastic Four. So, you know, they've got like Mark Bagley on the regular book, and then they've got Mike Allred on like the I guess you call it the B team or whatever they're supposed to be. You know, it's like Ant-Man and a bunch of estrogen. Yeah. You know,
like. I don't even remember two of them. Well, come on, first of all, it's She-Hulk, and she's fine to have on a team.
Well,
she's a mainstay.
It's She-Hulk, Medusa, and then they made up some chick.
Yeah.
Name is Miss Thing, and she's described as Lindsay Lohan in Thing's body armor or something. So.
That was the most disturbing thing I ever seen. I'm like, what the fuck is this? It was the Thing's body with a little girl's head on top of it. I'm like, what's going on here? And then they explain that she's wearing a Thing armor suit. First of all, her head is exposed, so I just blow her head off. If I'm an abomination, I'm just going to take her head off. And we already have the She-Hulk on there as a, you know, as the strong guy, so they don't need her. Mike Alvarez just has to do something weird, even though I don't, he's not writing it, Matt Fraction is, but he just had, he's like, well, if you want me on FF, it has to be weird and fucked up. Weird motherfucker. Anyway, I don't like that. I like, even though all of the Jonathan Hickman Fantastic Fours that I've been reading, I haven't liked them. I only read, like, five or six things that he's written for Fantastic Four, and I haven't liked it, even though I should, because they're all done in one and simple stories, but I haven't liked it. but I still want him to be on it, because I like the idea of this Fantastic Foundation and Fantastic Four, two comic books where he's got to keep in continuity, and you get two FF comic books a month, but now it's different. You know, now they changed it.
Yeah, because they're trying to switch things up.
And they took Hickman off. Do you know where he's going to go? You don't know?
No, I don't think so. I haven't been paying attention. Like, I don't know. Are they putting him on Avengers now? Or one of those Avengers books?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Yeah, yeah. And people were happy, too, because I think they're sick of Brian Michael Bendis.
Yeah, yeah. Because I know he's not. He's not writing the Avengers after this. So I think Hickman's writing some Avengers stuff now, right? So.
Yeah, I'll take a look at that. And this, I haven't kept up with any of the Avengers versus X-Men stuff. It's too much stuff to keep up with. So I don't know anything about it.
So far, the only thing I've really read is that tie-in with Avengers Academy. So, like, those couple issues. Like, the first one I thought was pretty decent, like, tie-in. But the second one with the Sentinel, I was kind of disappointed because it didn't have, it felt like a fill-in, you know. It didn't have Tom Grummett artwork and then, like, you know, they were all, you know, trying to protect the Sentinel for the little kid, you know, and everything. I don't know. It was just kind of whatever, yeah. But, you know.
All the tie-ins are filler, just like they had the Red Hawk going trying to kill. And it was in one of those Avengers books, the Red Hawk went and tried to kill Cyclops.
Okay.
And I'm like, and of course they fell big time, and they sent him back to the Avengers on their doorstep. And it's like, you, this is feeling like a motherfucker, bastards. But yeah, and it's just going on and on. It's like it won't end. They got like 9 issues.
Yeah, I keep actually asking my buddy who is following it. I was like, let me know when it ends, and then maybe I'll
get a trade.
I'll try to catch up on it or whatever. But I kind of like you. I don't feel like keeping up with it right this minute. You know.
And then there was something else I was going to just the fact that the Marvel, starting from number one, what's that ever do for anybody? They're not going to reboot the universe like DCU, so what's the point of having number ones? Does number ones really...
The point is endless confusion. Like, you were confused about, like, Superboy and stuff. Remember how you were talking about that on the Wood Show, how there was, like, a Superboy and, like, you know, 2011, but then there's another Superboy series in, like, 2012, but they're both, like, number ones. It's like,
yep.
It's like Incredible Hulk and Iron Man and Fantastic Four, like they're all going back to number ones, and they just had like, well, I know, like, yeah. Incredible Hulk just got like relaunched, and it's like those kind of things like always baffle me. And you know what drove me crazy was even the New 52, like, you know, that Batman Dark Knight series by David Finch. It's like I got confused because when I was buying some of that, like, I bought some of the New 52 version, but then I bought some of the version from, like, the year before.
Yeah.
And when I was going, I was like, I got number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And then I would go, wait, what the fuck's going on? Because I had bought the wrong, you know, I bought the one from last year for some stupid music.
I did that same thing, yeah.
So anyway, but it's okay. I figured it out. But you know, like it's
fuck
just,
that. You bought it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I was the same way. I was like, okay, I got Dark Knight. I'm about to review it, but I ended up having the one from 2011. Just like you did. And I'm like, what? And I just felt like I had something old, even though it was a good comic book issue. But I'm like, I was pissed. I'm like, I got the wrong Dark Knight. It's by the same guy.
Yeah, it's by the exact same guy. It's kind of tough to discern the difference sometimes. I guess you got to pay attention.
No, fuck them for doing that, man. The sales can't be boosted that big from a number one. You know, why can't y'all do something else like promote on television and on the internet? You know, like, you know, on these, like YouTube and stuff and have like commercials and things and just be out there in a video fast. There are some good things they could do on video with, you know, they can do CG, like mini cartoons.
Yeah. And yeah.
This is what
I used to like those old, commercials G.I. Joe. Used to have like G.I. Joe and Transformers and stuff. Like those were cool. It's like that. It seemed like they were trying to do some of those. Like I didn't know, but they have like a 30-second TV spot for before Watchmen. So I had not seen that until like maybe last month or something. So I guess I don't know if it's doing its job because I never saw it on TV. I only saw it on the internet. But you know,
yeah, that's a good start. I mean, they just need to do that, and they need to do I forgot those viral marketing in big cities and stuff. They need to do that for comic books instead of rebooting to number one every 18 months. Okay, so try to get instead just promote the fact that hey, we're in issue 700 and it's a legacy, and forget all this stuff about people and being intimidated. If they're intimidated by the numbering, then they ain't gonna buy it because it's number one. They're still not gonna buy it.
Yeah,
but anyway. So, speaking of Watchmen, we're going to review Before Watchmen, Night Owl number 2, and Darth Maul number 1. And I still can't find my, I'm still mad I can't find my Darth Maul comic, but I remember, oh, actually, no, still can't find it. But we'll talk about that. And what was the other one that we...
Oh, the Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, yeah. Okay, so I got my notes for that, too. Watchmen, Before Watchmen, Night Owl number 2. And number 1, I'm only familiar with just because I watched a video on it. The Last Angry Geek did a video about it, so I just watched it.
Oh, okay.
I watched his video, and basically, with the first issue of that was just, did you read the first issue of Night?
Yeah. I've been, actually, it's kind of funny, like, I don't particularly think these are like the greatest comics I've ever read or anything. They're kind of less subtle, like the film version, like Zack Snyder's version. But for some reason, like, I don't know what it is. Like, you know, it's like, in that one movie when Denzel was selling like blue magic or whatever, like if Alan Moore is like blue magic, like this is like the cut up shitty version of the drug or whatever. But I'm still like jonesing every week for some reason. I'm like, oh, I want to read the next Before Watchmen thing. So I've actually been reading them all. Like the only one I kind of think kind of is a waste so far is Ozymandias. But so far, I mean, I kind of been reading all the other ones and I'm kind of, you know, I don't know. I'm at least being entertained even if they're not, you know, pinnacles of the art form or whatever.
Yeah. Cause it just seemed like, the Silk Spectre and, the other one, the Night, I forget the one with the original Night Owl. And the whole team.
Oh, well, Minutemen and
like
Comedian. Like I've enjoyed reading most of those.
Okay, so. I haven't read Comedian, but the other ones just seem like like stuff that we knew happened already.
Yeah, that's what the Ozymandias one felt like to me. Where I was like, the only difference was it's like, oh, and there was a girl, you know. And I was just kind of like, that's it. Like I felt like I read that story. You know, it's kind of like they went into his whole, you know, backstory and stuff again, and I kind of went, well, I remember that from Watchmen. Like I remember him taking his long walk and trying to be like Alexander the Great and stuff. Like I don't need to, you know, see that again or hear that again, you know. So
but the one I didn't read and I would like to know about is Rorschach number 1.
Yeah, that I don't even think that's come out yet, has it?
Okay, all right, that's okay, it must not have. Okay, yeah, because they said, see, this is, yeah, okay, they got it, they printed it wrong. That's what I thought.
Oh, the release dates are all wrong. Yeah, I think that comes out next week.
Yeah, it says here, in stores 8/15, but it says Rorschach number 2 in the back of
But they probably mean number 1, right?
Right, right. They
like, yeah, one. As far as I know, it hasn't come
good,
out.
Good, then good. Then I'm going to be on that because I want to, even though Brian Azzarello, I'm not sure how his writing is. I didn't read 100 Bullets. But I think he did something with Luke Cage. I didn't like it.
Oh yeah, he wrote that Max Penny with Cage. I mean, I don't know. Like, it depends on what you're into and stuff. Like, he had a couple runs on like Batman, and he did
Superman.
Yeah. So it's like there's some things like that where you know it seems like they get him for a little more. You know, hardcore type. You know, he's writing. He's writing the comedian. Yeah. He's writing Rorschach. You know, so he's more into the down and dirty world of comics. You know,
but they got him doing Wonder Woman though, and I read the first couple issues of that, and I wasn't impressed with that. But okay, so Rorschach, I'll be on that number 2. But right now we're talking about Night Owl number 2, and the reason I bought this one is just because the thing that I like most about the original Watchmen and the movie, because I like the movie better than I like the comic books, and was the team up of Rorschach and Night Owl. That I really, really like that. I mean, I like Rorschach by himself. That was my number one thing, when you know, his origins with his mother and all that stuff. But I really liked him, his personality with Night Owls. And when I saw them on the cover and looked through it and saw that they were working together, That's what I would want a comic of. Like, when I heard about this, I was like, I hope they do Night Owl and Rorschach in the 70s when they used to team up and patrol the neighborhood. And that's what they gave me. So
did you feel like it delivered? Like that's the one thing that I wonder about, because it's like, I think for some people, like, they get really specific in these miniseries about what, you know, they make deliberate decisions. So I guess if you had some perfect image in your head of a Rorschach Night Owl team up, maybe sometimes you read it and you go, oh wait, that's not what I envisioned, or were you totally happy with it?
I was happy with it. I was happy. Even though it was given to the writer, JMS, it was basically given to him, like, this is all you gotta do is some things like this. Because they hinted at it in the movie and in the book. Okay, all you gotta do is keep their relationship like it was in the movie and the book.
Yeah.
And do things that they already, like, in this comic book, they have, first of all, well, we'll get to that first scene later on, but they have Rorschach going to church and his, this is how he got that sign.
Yeah, the origin of the sign.
And he saw the preacher preaching, basically the preacher was preaching just like the way Rorschach thinks in the books. And then, you know, they run across a hooker, a dominatrix.
I like the preacher's line makes me laugh, because he's like, they listen to that music that's loud as hell, because that's where it comes from.
I did like that.
It made me laugh.
And the thing that really sold that this whole comic book for me was that all of that storyline with this art by Joe Kubert, Joe and
Andy.
Oh, god damn. But there's so many things in this comic. But basically, I was saying it was given to the writer. All he had to do was deliver on what they did in the movie, where it has a Rorschach kept talking about Kitty Genovese, I think that's her name, the woman who was killed in 1968, like they did in the book. He all he did was elaborate a little bit on that, and I was like, okay, that's a given. We already know his origin. We already know. And then, but they said, okay, wait, I just put this in here that was already established. Yeah. It's kind of like fanboy service for me. It's kind of what I expected, but they had an added little bonus here of they added in a dominatrix, which makes it puts a little twist on things. You know, it's not out of the ordinary. Like the other books, you know where they're going, but right here they add this dominatrix in here.
Well, she was in the original. Do you remember the best scene I could, like, she was kind of like Night Owl's Catwoman or whatever, you know, like that kind of chick that he was kind of, like, you know they're going to get into some kind of relationship, because, like, that scene in the movie where they, like, him and Lori, like, you know, I guess, unclothe their naked bodies to reveal the superhero outfits. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just them. But in the actual comic, like, when he's having that dream, it's like she unzips and turns into the Twilight Lady for a second, and then unzips again, and, you know, like, so there's sort of like, you know, it's kind of like his past flame or something. So you're going to kind of, hopefully you'll see how they embark on their torrid relationship or whatever.
Okay, then I take a couple points away from JMS for originality then.
Yeah. That's not original. It's just what it is.
Okay, well, for still it delivered. I love this art, this Joe Kubrick art. I love it, man. I love
it. You know what's cool is that, I don't know, for me, like, I think it's kind of, like, symmetrical, like, because you got the father doing the inking and the son doing the pencils, and, like, Night Owl is, like, a legacy superhero. I don't know. It just seems kind of, like, cool to me. And the art, of course, like you said, is really dynamite on it. Like, it looks really good.
And JMS is fucked up in the head like Rorschach when it comes to writing. But, no, seriously, this is a... Yeah, I like the comic. I give it a thumbs up. But I did have a nitpick. There was a scene where they bust in on the dominatrix, and Rorschach sees her. She's beating a guy who's on a horse who's tied up to one of those horse things, and he tries to beat her up because she's a whore. Even though I don't know if he would be like that, I guess he would be. I know he feels she's a whore, but I don't know if he would straight out attack a woman. But they have that in the comic books. He tries to attack her. Night Owl slams him. He said, "No, don't. You can't hit a woman. You can't hit her." And he slams him into the horse and knocks over the guy who was tied up, knocks him over on the floor. That guy's neck would have been broken. That was like, man, he's just laying on the floor and they're still talking. They're still like he's like, you can't hit her. She helped us. And they're like, she's a whore. Like, wait a minute. That guy is on the floor. You knocked him over. He's overweight and you knocked him over. He's still laying on the floor. And she's talking to Night Owl like, oh, you need to come back sometime. Wait, your client is on the floor. That's the only nitpick I had.
Yeah.
Here. But and there was a murder case here. I mean, there's a lot of things they're probably going to pick up on. I guess there's someone murdering a woman, or maybe it's just one case of a murder where they just walk in to a murder investigation in their superhero outfits and the cops are standing aside like they're detectives, like Night Owl and Rorschach are, you know, part of the police department, and they're investigating.
Hey, they're duly deputized agents of the law.
But they're at a murder scene where there's a lot of delicate evidence around. But I like this comic. I like how the relationship between them. The only thing that kind of disturbed me was, the scenes of Night Owl's abusive past with his parents, you know. But was that in the original?
that's the thing. For me, like, I know I remember in Watchmen how he inherited all his money. So to me, it was kind of weird because it seemed like that was a little more heavy-handed to me, like, where I was kind of like, wow, I don't remember that at all. Like, because it obviously, like, I think that I would say that that's kind of original, you know what I mean, or at least a new layer added to, because like that scene, the thing that disturbed me the most was the scene where his mom comes in and basically he's asking her as a young kid, like, well, I think you guys wanted to abort me, but it was one or the other of you, like, was it dad or was it you? And she just kind of cries and says it's not important, so obviously it must have been her, you know, like, and you're just kind of like, oh, well, that's kind of, wow, that's kind of like a heavy load to lay on, like, a little kid, you know? Like, so you're kind of like, wow, that's kind of, you know, and I was kind of like, I don't know. I guess that's trying to impart that, you know, he's got his own personal issues, just like Rorschach, you know, but I don't...
Man, I don't see him coming from that background. I never saw him coming from that kind of background.
I guess that's what I mean. Class. You know, they make definitive choices in these books, and maybe you'd never envision that for the character. So I'd say for fans like that, you know, you might not like to read this, but to me, I just kind of take it as what it is. Like, I'm still kind of entertained by it, and if there's things like that I don't really see working so well, I just kind of you know, to me, I'm just kind of like, well, that, I don't know if that works that well for that guy.
I know, yeah, not for now.
You know, like. Yeah.
But then another nice touch in here was how his inspiration of the original Night Owl, seeing him on TV, inspired this guy, Danny, to be the new Night Owl, fighting bullies in school. And he goes to school, he shows up at school with a domino mask on, like Night Owl, and confronts his bullies. I thought that was a nice scene, you know. Well, like I said, the art brings it home in this comic book. It just feels like a classic comic book. Like I'm reading those old comic books from the 70s that Joe Kubert used to draw, like Sergeant Rock and all that stuff. You got anything else you want to say about Night Owl?
No, I mean, I just that I enjoyed it, and I thought it was a good book.
I recommend it. So you also remember? Oh, yes, you said it's good. Okay, and then on the back of this, though, well, I got to look this up. I didn't look it up. But on the back, there's an ad for Warner Archive releasing new DVDs every Tuesday. So that reminds me, I got to check this out. Because the ad they have here is the Shazam band.
Oh, for the live-action Shazam series.
Yeah. So they must have that. They must be releasing that on video.
Yeah, that was one of the announcements at Comic-Con. I kind of got excited about that because, like, that, I'm hoping that means they'll keep releasing other stuff, you know, like maybe the Shazam cartoon from Filmation or something. Like, I'm kind of hoping that they keep releasing, you know, more stuff, you know, made on demand stuff, because that's the only way I can get it. Like, I'll take it that way. Like, that's cool.
And then, what's the next one? We got, Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe. Now, wait, did you read just one, part one?
Or? Yeah, I read the first issue.
Okay, I guess, I don't know if I got a lot to say, because I know I did that on the show.
Okay.
But I mean, we can talk about just the fact that I like
it. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Like, what did you think of it?
I liked it, but I see this as like a B movie. Like, if I see, Night Owl, as if I'm going to the movies. Like today, I'm going to see The Campaign with Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis. I don't like when people talk shit about them, saying I hate them, they get on my nerves. I like Will Ferrell and Zach Galifianakis, but it's a movie from a movie studio with a budget. You expect it to have to look nice, look professional, the best a movie could look, and be professional as possible. That's how I looked at Night Owl, but something with Deadpool. Kills the Marvel Universe. It's like I'm going to see one of those old grindhouse movies from the 70s on video, like Bruce Lee fights back from the grave. So, yeah. so I got a different curve. I give it a different grading curve. Yeah, I recommend it if you just want to see action movie. I don't like using the term turn off your brain, but you know.
I guess that's one of those things for me, like where I couldn't turn off my brain to it. And I guess it kind of juxtaposes like the Darth Maul comic I read. It seems to juxtapose like my two hypocritical views on the situation, because it's like, I don't like Deadpool running around like pwning the Watcher and the Fantastic Four and everything. And then, but in the meantime, like the Darth Maul thing seems like they're setting it up rather well for him to go around and murder a bunch of no-name redshirt Jedis, which for some reason I'm kind of looking forward to. But, you know, it's like, I guess it depends on the context and how it's presented to me, you know. And I was just kind of like, you know, things like that. Like, I can't turn off my brain to, like, wait, Invisible Woman just blew up his head, but then he just, like, grows it back, you know, and, like, things like that.
Yeah, he
like,
just grew it back. Okay, yeah. I hate that shit. If you kill somebody in, you know, with a healing factor, if their brain is gone and obliterated, they should just be dead.
Well, okay. It got to the point where, you know, I guess you'd say, like, fan auras, like, especially Wolverine's got, like, way out of control, to the point where, you know, in the old days, it was like, you know, oh, the, you know, you could just hit him with a wooden stick to his, you know, to his trachea, and then he'd be dead, you know. But now, all of a sudden, you know, it's like, you know, obviously the Wolverine fans have their explanations about why his healing factor's so accelerated these days. But, you know, now it's to the point where, you know, Wolverine, you know, just takes a spaceship into the sun and is, like, chilling. you know, sipping margaritas and throwing his flesh back, like, on a periodic basis while he's in the heart of the sun. And you're just kind of like, well, that's kind of fucking insane. You know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like, that's stupid. And I was reading one of his comics of in the past recent years where he, if he goes to death and he, you know, when he, if he dies, you know, like, if he blows up, he dies. And if he defeats death, then he can come back. And his body regrows and regenerates. And I was like, man, fuck that, man. Just make it on a real... I remember in the 70s, he was going to fall off... He fell off a cliff, a high mountainous... Off the cliff of a high mountain. And they said, oh, even if he falls from this height, it'll kill him even with his adamantium bones. But then, so Cyclops had to save him. I remember Cyclops was, like, shooting beams at Wolverine's ass and back so he could come down slower.
Yeah,
and I always remember that scene, that comic book from like 78 or 79, and I was like, see, now that's, you know, even if he falls, he'll die, but here now you can blow him up, like Nitro can blow him up and he'll regenerate. I hate that.
I guess I've never been a fan of the weird split personality Deadpool. Like, I was always kind of more like, I really like the Joe Kelly Deadpool, like the one, the run from like, I don't know, the early 2000s, I want to say. I don't know.
So when did his split personality start?
Most people blame that on this writer, Daniel Way. Like, I think, I want to say it's like volume 4 of Deadpool. Like, but I don't know if I'm talking out my ass because I'm just doing it from memory. But basically, like, the last really long ongoing Deadpool series was written by Daniel Way, and then, like, there, it's like that, that's where the yellow box and the white box came from, and, like, to me, like, that was always, like, something new, but I guess to maybe a lot of fans, maybe that, you know, maybe that was their first, you know, Deadpool comic, you know, maybe that's all they know, you know, or whatever, but, like, I, you know, like, some people, you know, kind of remember other stuff, like, you know, Cable Deadpool, or, you know, the Deadpool series I'm talking about by Joe Kelly. Like, I always thought Joe Kelly was pretty, he wrote them pretty funny, and, like, I guess of recent stuff, like, I kind of liked, there was this funny alternate universe thing in not Uncanny X-Force, which Deadpool's a member of, but there was another X-Force series before that by Chris Yost, and, like, they go to, like, a future where Strife's ruling or whatever, and Deadpool is, like, you know, running around there, and so, like, when I read Chris Yost write Deadpool, I was, like, kind of laughing and thought, hey, this guy kind of writes him pretty well, and there weren't a bunch of, you know, yellow and white, you know, wacky split personality dialogue boxes. And that was always kind of, you know, weird to me. And I guess they kind of sort of eliminate that trope in the first issue, you know, by having the, I guess, I don't know, the evil personality take over or whatever. Yeah, but you know, it like watching like the Deadpool, whack Mr. Fantastic and the Watcher kind of smacks of like, you know, the Red Hulk, like, punching Watcher upside the head. You know, it's just, it seems like one of these things where it's like they're doing it for some kind of, you know, ridiculous shock value, and it's hard for me to, you know, kind of
take that. Well, it is called Kills the
Marvel. Yeah. You know what you're in for, I guess, if you look at the title. But, you know, to me, I'm kind of like, oh, okay, here's some, it kind of reminds me of like when Punisher killed the Marvel Universe, you know, and you just kind of think to yourself, well, Spider-Man wouldn't go out like a bitch that way.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like things like that. And you kind of feel like, for me, it's like, I've never been super into those things unless you just, you kind of have to take it like a joke. It's like, I remember even Lobo did something like that. They never had, you know, they didn't obviously sell it as Lobo Kills the DC Universe, but it was like, I think it was like issue 50 of his own comic, and they basically did the same thing. You know, Lobo runs around and, you know, fragging fragolas, you know, the Electric Superman, or he, you know, he kills Kyle Rayner or whoever, you know, like all these guys. And, you know, in the back of your head, you're kind of like, oh, they wouldn't go out that way. But, you know, for comedic value, you just kind of have to be like, oh, you know, whoops, he slipped on a banana peel and got, you know, impaled, or, you know, whatever stupid shit happens, you know. You just kind of got to take it with a grain of salt, I guess.
Yeah, I can't take this with a grain of salt because, okay, yeah, the thing with when he killed most of the Fantastic Four, I didn't have a problem because the way he did it, they didn't show him kill Fantastic, and they just showed Fantastic melting, and the thing was just on the floor in rocks. So I said, okay, whatever. But Sue sit there and watch her brother die. He slit Johnny's throat in front of her, and she didn't do nothing until her brother was dead. Then he blew, then she blew his head up. She blew Deadpool's head apart. I'm like, no, she wouldn't do it. She could have killed. There's a thousand ways that she would have prevented that, and I didn't like it. That took me out of the story. And that's the main thing. And then to me, Charles Xavier wasn't acting in character. Like, he turns, the X-Men turn Deadpool over to this mental institution, but Charles Xavier has, you know, he's the most powerful empath in the world, but he doesn't know that this doctor is actually...
Is Dr. Psycho.
Yeah, Psycho Man. So I'm like, I'm out of it. It's like the writer is choosing style over substance. And like I said in my review of this, when he killed Johnny in front of Invisible Girl, I was thinking that it was supposed to be nothing in the panel where the Invisible Girl, I thought he was doing it for style. That I could see what he was thinking when he wrote it. Okay, you can't see her there because she's invisible. He slits Johnny's throat, the blood splats on her, and then you just see her outline in blood. But it didn't look like that. It looked like shit. I'm like, whatever the artist did, it wasn't impressive. So I'm like, you did all that for nothing. You made Sue look ignorant and stupid and like an amateur. You made her look stupid just for your, you know, style over substance story. And that pissed me off. So I don't know if I could. If you're a Deadpool fan, I know you'll like it. So I give it like a 2 stars out of 5, like a 2.5 stars, like something I would read, not necessarily something I would buy. What do you think? What was your?
Yeah, I don't think I want to, like, it's just one of those things, like, I don't usually give things stars or whatever, but I kind of say whether I liked it or thought it was good and whether I keep reading it or not. Like, I didn't think it was good, and I wouldn't want to keep reading it. I think if you don't like the whole weird split personality boxes and you don't like watching, you know, familiar characters act out of character, you know, kind of like what you're talking about with Professor, it's like, to me, like, that style over substance is like, I like how Wolverine's the only dude there going, hey, Chuck, I don't know if this is a good idea. You know, and you're just kind of like, why is it Wolverine? But meanwhile, Storm, Cyclops, and Professor X, it's like the story of the X-Men for the last 3 years. It's like Wolverine's the only one who has a brain, but the rest of them are all inept freaking morons. Like, I don't know. Come on. It's like Storm and Cyclops, like, led the X-Men, and Professor X was supposed to be, like, their founder and mentor, but they're all clueless, hapless morons, but Wolverine's the one's like, hey, Chuck, I don't know. You know, like, I don't sniff right, Chuck. You know, and you're just kind of like, okay.
It's been like that since the 90s, and then, of course, the movie cemented that.
Yeah. So... I think that's funny, but, you know, I mean, I can poke fun and laugh at that. Like, if you want a good yuck, I guess you should keep buying it, but...
Actually, I bought issue 2, because it looks like they come out every week, and then they're going to have trade paperback in October.
Yeah.
The collected edition, but part 2, yeah, you wouldn't like that either. Spider-Man went like a bitch.
Like a bitch. like a what-if Spider-Man.
And the way he killed the Avengers was very inventive, except for the two who couldn't die from the way, because he killed them in an explosion, and he used Henry Pym's, because they were all in a meeting room, and they was like, we got to do something about this. Like, and nobody's like all pissed off that he kills all these, he killed Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, and everybody else, and yet he killed all their friends. And they're like, I guess we got to do something about him. And Wolverine was like, we got to kill this motherfucker. And Hawkeye's like, yeah, I agree. But nobody's upset. They're just like, yeah, he's got to go. And then next thing you know, he's like, oh, shit. Wolverine was like, damn, I think he got... Because they was like, somebody ran in the room. And they was like, I can't... Oh, Jarvis runs in the room like, I can't find Hank Pym, Mr. Pym. He's been missing for hours. And they was like, Wolverine was like, oh, shit. And he used the Pym particles to make a whole bunch of bombs and nuclear weapons and shit really small, and it was sitting on the table the whole time in like really minuscule, and then it goes back to regular size, and they look on the table, there's a whole bunch of bombs and shit on the table, and blows up. That's kind of funny, you know, but of course you can't, I don't know Luke Cage should have been dead from this, but he still had on his shirt and pants. Talk about close to kill me.
See, it sounds, I don't know, it sounds funny to me, but that's the only way I could take any enjoyment out of it, is just to kind of laugh at it, I guess, but, you know.
And the way he killed his door was the same way, was in a comical way. But I'm like, Spider-Man wouldn't have went out the way he killed Spider-Man. This is no way. Is this stupid? And he would have been dead a long time ago. Just say, you can't, that's like making Aunt May kills the Marvel Universe. She's not going to be able to do it. Okay, so neither would Deadpool.
No, I just make her golden oldie, you know. She can she can run around with the power cosmic and take out everybody. Like, that's cool. I totally buy that.
Okay, but if you're a Deadpool with Deadpool's power set, he would have been dead a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So I guess we both have to say, overall, we wouldn't recommend it if we like a good story. But if you want to see violence, just go ahead. If you, and you're a Deadpool mark, go ahead, buy it. It's just like when people tell you, I tell you that Transformers 3 was a bad movie, but you know you're going to go see it anyway. So go ahead. And then, what's the last? Oh, the Sith. The Sith, what's his name?
Darth Maul.
And what's the subtitle?
Death Sentence.
Oh, man, I wish I had the comic in front of me. This comic pissed me off.
I'm amused by these comics. Like, I think it's funny because they're clearly setting up, like, a bunch of, like, I like the Dave Dorman cover. Like, I used to read, like, I was a big Star Wars fan for a long time. And then, like, the prequels kind of killed it for me. So, like, but there were, like, so many comics that I read and everything. But I haven't read a Star Wars comic in a long time. So this was kind of funny. When I read the foreword, like the, you know, how they give you the little synopsis in the front of the page. I was surprised because, even though I say I'm not a big Star Wars fan anymore, I've still watched on Cartoon Network, like all four seasons of that Clone Wars cartoon.
You got four seasons?
Yeah, four seasons. So I've watched them all and it actually, you know, the continuity ties in, you know, pretty heavily to that, you know, series because, you know, basically, you know, Chicken Walker Legs, Maul, and all that, you know, Savage, Opress, and all, you know, his brother, like, that's all stuff that they introduced in that, that animated show. So I was kind of like, oh, this, like, totally follows the continuity of that show. So I already had some familiarity with it, so maybe that's why I was kind of like, you know, okay, I can follow this and everything. But what kind of cracked me up is how then when they introduce, it's like, oh, you know, master gonna die in a few issues, master, you're lame and an alien and you'll get your head chopped off in a few issues, and master, you don't ever hang out with Obi-Wan Kenobi or Anakin Skywalker, we're going to send you you know, to find out what's going on with Darth Maul. And all I could think of is like, uh-huh, you guys are all gonna get slain. You know, so
there was a goddamn female master Jedi, and she didn't wear any clothes that anybody else wore. She was a black woman with some damn gold and green, looking like Mary J. Blige. She had her hair cut in a stylish way, like Salt and Pepper from the old rap group. And she had the long ear, big black girl earrings. I'm like, no. If you're a Jedi, ain't you supposed to wear the same robe that everybody else wears, brown? And she looked like she fucking somebody, okay? She's fucking somebody. She's got lipstick and stuff on like she's about to go out to the club. I'm like, she's not a Jedi. Y'all make me sick.
Is it weird? Like, I totally, like, I took it as more of like an Indian type dress or whatever. Do you know what I mean? Like, but I don't know. Like,
nobody else dressed in gold and green.
That's what I mean. Like, no, I agree with what you're saying, but like, it reminded me more of like that kind of, I don't know. That was the vibe I got out of it, but it's like, obviously we can see different things, you know.
She got a little black Padawan with her, and he's a little boy, and they brought them on a mission to go fight. She brought this little kid on a mission to go find Maul and his brother Savage, or you call him Savage. That's how you pronounce it.
Yeah. That's how they pronounce it on the show, yeah.
Because you're like, Savage Opress. I'm like, goddamn, okay, even Lucas ain't that goddamn obvious with the name. But, yeah, and the the reason why you say, okay, these comic books, they link up with the animated series and, you know, the novels and everything matches up. Yeah, the only problem is Lucas's main part of the franchise, the movies, his shit don't match up.
It doesn't match up, yeah.
He's the only one. He's the only fucking one. Oh, asshole. But anyway.
Well, you know what's funny, though? I was, like, looking at it, though. It looks like, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's like anything with licensed properties. I mean, there's other novels that don't match up with this and different things like that. So, I mean, and it seems like they've always been big on, at least at Dark Horse, they've all, you know, everybody's been excited about trying to resurrect Darth Maul in some way because they all seem to like, you know, getting a kick out of using the character. So I remember, like, some of the older comics I read, like, they did a thing where Darth Maul fought with Darth Vader. Do you know what I mean? And you're like, well, how can that happen? It's like, oh, it was just some clone of Darth Maul. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, you know, they wanted to have that face off, and then they aped that that Frank Miller pose from Ronin. You know how, like, he kills the guy by stabbing himself with the sword? So, like, that's basically how it ends, like, where Darth Vader, you know, like, stabs himself with his own lightsaber just to take out Maul or whatever, you know. So, like, they seem to get, I think here it's probably the same exact review. Like, this comic may very well suck, but if you're a Darth Maul mark, you should probably buy it, you know. Like,
I guess you see there's a lot of average storytelling of these guys. Oh, they find Darth and his brother in a, you know, these bounty hunters, they go after Darth and his brother, they find them in a bar somewhere, and some little talking anthropomorphized animal, which is, that always sells it for me. I love talking animal people who dress like humans. Hey, he's in there. I have my money for finding him. And then, you know, that type of thing. And then they go, of course, they go in there and get all their asses handed to them. And they find out that this rich guy who owns all these companies, he's put out a hit on the two brothers. And at the end of the story, you find out when they find him, they find a rich guy. They kill his Halo forces.
Oh, yeah. His little Halo army or whatever.
Yeah. They kill him. And it finds out he just drew him in just so he could make them an offer. But they don't even get a chance to make him an offer. They just say, fuck it, you're dead. He's like, no, wait a minute. I got some. I'm making an offer for you guys. And they're like, fuck it. Kill him. And they toss him over the fucking side. And then he gets rescued by the red shirt Jedi. And that's the end of this issue. But to me, I had fun with it. I had fun getting angry because, okay, I didn't know that Darth Maul was back in the cartoons with those chicken legs.
Okay, and I
was just pissed off about that.
It's funny. There's like even a short story too from Dark Horse, I think, called Star Wars Visionaries, but it was written by the ILM guys. So I bet you whoever thought of that story put that into the cartoon too, because basically the first time he ever showed up with chicken legs was like they had this story where Obi-Wan's on Tatooine just chilling, and like Darth Maul comes out of nowhere with chicken legs and, you know, is trying to attack him for revenge. And then I guess it ends with like Uncle Owen like pops Darth Maul in the head or something with a blaster or whatever and saves Obi-Wan or something. But it was like, you know, it was like a short story basically.
Yeah.
And so and they had some, you know, ILM guys do some, you know, promotional kind of character art or whatever. But it seems like that carried over into that animated series.
That sucks. If you're gonna kill him that way, he should have been dead. Because the kid said, oh, he doesn't have any legs. No, he doesn't have any legs. His lower intestine is gone. No pelvis, no dick. No asshole. He should have been dead. And then the woman's talking about hate keeps some men alive. No. He not only was he cut in half at the abdomen area, but he fell however many stories into a hole.
Apparently in the Star Wars universe, that only drives you mad for a little while, and then you regain your senses. So
it's just like when Boba Fett got tossed into the Sarlacc pit.
Yeah, but he got better.
But okay, so cool. So I guess I recommend this, you know.
Yeah, I think I'd say I'm a Darth Maul mark, even though I don't like the prequels that much.
He was the only thing good about the prequels.
This is entertaining. Like, I mean, if you want to see a bunch of redshirt Jedi get slaughtered, like the other thing too is like, because it's a comic and not like a series on Cartoon Network, I bet you you're more than likely to see these red shirt guys actually get, you know, skewered, you know, as opposed to...
Well, wait a minute. It's a kid and a black woman. Do you think they're going to slaughter him?
I think some of those, I mean, maybe some of those characters will make it out, but I bet some of those characters are going to get killed. Like, at least that purple looking dragon whatever.
Yeah,
like, some of them have to get nailed. I mean, the reason why you've never heard of these Jedi before, because they're going down. Like, you know,
he's 12 years old.
You know, but I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Well, wait a minute. Actually, Anakin did kill a bunch of kids who were under 12, so I guess he can die too. So, yeah, so I recommend it, even though I'm still mad about the chicken leg Darth Maul. But I thought when I bought it, I thought it was going to take place before episode one. Okay. Yeah. And everybody, it's nothing wrong with liking Darth Maul because he's the only one thing that was good in that whole trilogy. And my friend said when they saw the first movie in the theater, everybody was watching that battle when Obi-Wan cut him in half. They was like, yeah! And then they was like, oh, they stopped halfway in the middle of there, yeah, because they realized he wasn't going to be in the second movie. And they was like, damn. They was like, yeah! And without Darth Maul, you don't have a good Star Wars prequel. So that's been the episode. Thanks for joining me and reviewing these three new comic books. Where can they find you, Derek?
They can find me at www.hocof.com for History of Comics on Film. And if you want to listen to other podcasts and stuff, I do a podcast with a bunch of guys called Fanholes. So that's at www.fanholespodcast.blogspot.com.
Cool. And you can find me at zoomcast.blogspot.com. And I looked at something. I think it was one of your. I made some comment on something. I think one of the Green Lantern or your Batman.
Oh yeah. I saw the top 10 Batman. Like you're talking about how you read that Man Bat story like me as a kid.
Oh yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Kurt Langstrom. He looks all creepy when he puts the you know, he takes the formula and stuff and. Yeah,
I think you said, didn't that, as a kid, that gave you a little bit a nightmare when he looked in the mirror?
Well, like, I remember being kind of, I don't know, it seemed so real to me. Like, it was very
difficult. Yeah, me too.
Like, I guess, I wouldn't say it was like a nightmare, but you know how, like, you get chills on the back of your neck?
Yeah.
Like, I was like, I just remember being, like, 4 or 5 years old and going, this is some creepy, like, what if this happened to me? Like, what if I drank some green stuff and all of a sudden I got, like, my hands got all hairy and I turned into a freaking bat? Like, it kind of like how people, I guess, read, you know, Kafka's Metamorphosis and, you know, freaked out that they were going to turn into a bug. Like, that kind of had the same effect on me, you know, seeing Kurt Langstrom turn into Man Bat. Yeah.
That story was a power record, and I had that when I was four or five years old, or six, one of those. And I had the same feeling reading that book, reading story at the same time as listening to it. And I was like, oh, I'm like, should they have made this one into it? Because they always made the most creepiest one, the most scariest ones into power record books. That story scared the shit out of me, where this man turned into a bat. Then they did Man-Wolf from Spider-Man.
Oh, okay.
Where he had to rip off the jewel off it. They ripped the jewel off it, John Jameson's skin. They ripped his skin off. And I'm like, you got this in a power record for kids? And there was another one that they had that was, even though I didn't have this one, the man thing, like the one where the clown kills himself. And it's like, why y'all making these ones? There's like more innocuous stories y'all could have translated to power records, but I blame Marvel. That's the episode. I know we went back off on a tangent. Maybe hope you could join me again sometime soon for I don't know, maybe a flash. Oh yeah, because I would like to finish.
Damage Control.
Yeah,
sweet.
Three. Well, we'll be up at series 3, I think, for next time.
Yeah.
Cool, bet. Then we got to set that up. All right, so like I said, y'all have a nice day. You have a nice weekend, Derek.
All right, you too, man. Thanks.
Peace.